call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. It's 136, 137. Today we have Senator Kelly, Senator Wilkowski, Senator Costello, myself, Senator Coghill, and I hear that Senator Meyer is on his way. Today we have several items, and we always seem to run out of time, so I'm going to try to keep things hopping along. We have confirmation hearings with Drew Phoenix, who I asked if he could be back online today. David Barton, who is also with the Commission on Human Rights, Lynn Gallant with the Alaska Judicial Council, and Senator Meyer just now joined us. Welcome, Senator Meyer. Then, after we've done the confirmation hearings, then we're going to go and have the Department of Law bring for us their Department of Advocacy before Federal Regulatory Commission, and that's Senate Bill 58. That'll be a first hearing, and my intention is to hear and hold it. But fiduciary access to digital access, which is a House bill, come to us. It has a Senate companion. I thought we could bring it up, have it introduced, and bring it up for a vote today, if you wish. Municipal liens, Senator Egan has the Senate Bill 100. I'd like to bring that up today. That's the second go-around on this. No opposition that I've heard of. We'll have Municipal League testify to it, and others as need be. Knowing our time is tight. And then the House Bill 106, Civil Legal Services Fund. My intention is to put an amendment on the table and then see if we can move the bill up to finance. And so that's the drill for the day. We have some people online already. We have the appointees to the State Commission on Human Rights. I thought we'd just go ahead and start down the list, and then we have Alaska Judicial Council, I'll just take them in the order in which they came in. We have Dave Barton, who is in Anchorage, who is an appointee to the State Commission for Human Rights, and then we'll go to Drew Phoenix, who agreed to come back before us and greatly appreciated from my perspective, and I have at least a couple to testify on that particular person on Drew. We have two to testify. So with that, let's go to David Barton. And David Barton, you've been on the phone for a while. Introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your willingness to serve on the Commission for Human Rights. And any particular things you might find interesting on your behalf or why you'd want to serve, please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to address the commission today. As you said, my name is David Barton. My professional experience and why I think I was interested in serving on the commission is I work for the Northwest ADA Information Center, which is based out of the University of Washington in Mount Lake Terrace, but what I specialize in is technical assistance and training in mainly disability-related laws, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Fair Housing Act. So my expertise for the commission is really from the disability perspective and non-discrimination requirements in that respect. So I have expertise in physical architectural issues, things like that, communication issues, policies and procedures, things like that. I've been living and working in Alaska specifically since 2002, mainly based out of here in Anchorage, but I've done trainings and technical assistance all over the state with employers and or state and local government bodies. I've worked with a number of towns and companies all over the place in this respect, and of course the community of people with disabilities as well. For a long time I was an employee at Access Alaska, which is an independent living center here in Anchorage, but now I'm based out of the University of Washington that houses what's called, when the Americans with Disabilities Act came out in the early 90s, part of that legislation created what they called the Disability and Business Technical Assistance Centers. And basically that's what my professional experience has come from in that aspect. It's probably the biggest minority as far as that goes, so it has the largest impact. So my interest on the commission is is to ensure that, you know, disability is, number one of the larger things that I'm interested in, but I think the commission should spend a lot of effort on, because I think it deserves one of the most, as far as focus for non-discrimination and things like that, I think the government should be more focused on that aspect of non-discrimination than probably most others. That's my expertise.
Thank you. Well, thank you for being willing to serve. Have you actually been to any of the commission meetings at this point, David?
I went to basically an introductory orientation type of meeting, but no, I have not been able to serve officially in capacity yet.
Okay.
I did for a while. I was the commission for the Anchorage Rights Commission for at least 5-6 years here in Anchorage, and I was the chairman there for many years. So I do have a little bit of experience, but mainly here in Anchorage. But as far as on the state commission, no, I haven't served.
Well, thank you. One of the things that came to attention when we were talking to Drew, I believe, was the perspective of the law and the commission's advocacy. As a professional advocating for disabilities, for the most part, you find that the commission should push the limits, or do you think our laws are sufficient, or do you think they should recommend to us? How do you see our laws fitting into the commission's work?
Let me back up a little bit. I guess maybe with little misperception about my work history in that respect, because what my mission in my professional duty is not to be an advocate per se for a person with a disability. In an example, in what we might be talking about here, my job and my capacity is kind of to be the neutral party to help either party, whether it's the person with a disability or, say, the business owner, kind of understanding the legalities of the law. So I'm not really here to help somebody advocate, but basically help both parties come to some kind of resolution and at least understand kind of what the intention was when it was passed. And, of course, the court rulings and whatnot, that things are interpreted over time. How those change the law. Part of my job is to educate whoever that side is, so to speak, of the issue, understand what that is. So I haven't per se been an advocate, which is why I think I'm in a good position to be a board member for this commission, is because in my capacity, in my job, I've very intimate knowledge of the disability community itself, its perspectives, and all the different types of conditions and things and how it's affected in our society. But I'm also very aware of employers' perspectives, working with them, housing, property managers, and owners. So I've kind of had equal experience with either side of that issue when it comes to discrimination. So I see that, and I've maintained that neutralness throughout my entirety job over the last 10, decade. And that's actually one reason why a lot of people call me for these issues, because they understand that. Because they typically understand that they get a fair perspective from me, because I have to be neutral. So that's how I see myself as being an asset to this commission, because I don't really see myself as an advocate in that respect. So I didn't want to miss.
All right.
Create any kind of misperception and kind of how I introduce myself if I, explain myself correctly.
You did a very good job of that, and thank you. That's a good clarification from my perspective. Senator Meyer has a question for you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and David, thank you for being with us this afternoon. I just wanted to ask you about the conflict of interest. First of all, I see you're a survivor of three types of cancer since age 4, and you're now age 44, so congratulations, and whatever you're doing, keep doing. But I don't understand why that would be a conflict of interest, the fact that you may want to start up a marijuana business that is a legal business, and certainly it has proven to be helpful to people who suffer from cancer.
I'm sorry, sir, what exactly is your question?
Why did you list that as a conflict of interest?
Because I think at the time there was a lot of controversy about that, and I guess I don't really know why. I guess from a disability perspective, as a person with a cancer, having cancer, and I know that the CDC, I think in our last year, has actually stated that I think THC has actually helped in reducing, if not killing, some forms of cancer. At that time, I disclosed it because I was a proponent of usage of that as an individual. But as far as starting a business or anything like that, as far as a disability, I wanted full disclosure and understanding why I would want to do that if I did.
Yeah,
certainly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's certainly understandable, David. Thank you.
Other questions for David at this point? Senator Kelly?
Good afternoon, David. Just a couple of questions. I'm going to ask you the same questions that I sent to Drew Phoenix, and the members should have the questions that I sent to Drew in their packets. So it has to do with some recent actions by the Human Rights Commission. And the Human Rights Commission put out a resolution on November 2nd. It was dealing with gender identity and sexual orientation. Were you familiar with that? With that resolution?
No, I'm sorry, Stacey, I'm not intimately in understanding of that, no, or familiar with it, no, sir.
Okay, that's fine. Essentially, what the kind of the rub is between some members of the legislature and the Human Rights Commission is that we have a definition in statute of what the Human Rights Commission, the issues that they will address, and the commission itself put out a resolution. I'm just going to read it for you. This is the one I was referring to. It's not therefore be it resolved that the Alaska State Commission on Human Rights requests that its staff work with the Department of Law to draft proposed regulations addressing the inclusion of prohibition against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity and expression under the existing law prohibiting sex discrimination, and to consider in that process the administrative application of the EEOC's interpretation of Title IV of the 64 Civil Rights Act prohibiting employment discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. The long short of it is that the statutes that we have don't include that, and I want to get from you your, not necessarily your personal view on that statute or that resolution, but are you aware, do you think you have a good understanding of what it is that the commissions are charged to do, and from the perspective not only of the legislature but the perspective of the Constitution, you're charged to carry out the statutes that exist currently. Do you understand that?
Yes, I think so, sir.
Okay. And let me just take it a step further. Do you think that the commission has the authority to promulgate and enforce regulations that prohibit sex discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, given that that is not in the state statutes?
If it's not in the statute yet, no, I don't believe they should have the authority. No.
Okay, thanks for
answering. Sure, I mean, without knowing a little bit more information about it, at the face of it, I would say no, sir.
Yeah, I don't want to push you on things you don't have information. No, that's a good answer. I appreciate it.
Other questions for Mr. Barton? Senator Wilkowski?
Thank you. Mr. Barton, did you receive a two-page letter that had written questions for you regarding sexual orientation and gender identity from anyone in the legislature?
No, not from the legislature, no.
If one candidate was applying for a job and they were questioned in a series of things about sexual orientation and gender and another candidate wasn't, would that indicate to you that there was discrimination occurring?
I'd have to know a lot of more details as well that we would be even talking about it in an employment situation, but
that's a hypothetical. At this point, I don't know that I'd push you to answer it because it's a discussion that's probably going to happen more at the committee table. But I think the even-handedness of asking questions of both appointees is probably the legitimate place to go. So,
if one, if one candidate for a position was asked a series of questions in detail for a position and another candidate was not, would that indicate to you that there was discrimination in those questions?
I would say avoiding discrimination. I would say that there's different questions, but not avoiding discrimination.
That's true.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Kelly?
And I don't know if the previous speaker was referring to the questions that I sent out, but I was trying to get the same questions to David here. And the reason I stopped the questioning is because he gave a pretty substantial answer on the role of the Human Rights Commission. And I think it's an answer that causes me to want to support him. And that's why I just didn't pursue it any further. I could ask him all these questions, but I think, frankly, he answered the question. The other questions, depending on the answers, and I honestly don't have in front of me, I'll talk to my staff before we go any further. I didn't get the answers back from the other candidate. Maybe I just don't have them in my packet.
Well, I mean,
but it could be that Drew answered the questions in the same way, in which case I'd move on.
Yeah, and
it has nothing to do with it.
I know that you sent him to Mr. Phoenix, so we'll deal with that when we get there.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I wasn't aware that David Barton was going to be before us today, or I would have sent him to him, too.
Other questions? David, thank you very much for being in front of us. Appreciate your willingness to work and for your past work with the ADA and your even-handedness. And I think the commission will do well. If you have any closing statements, go ahead. It's now your time, or I can release you to let you go on to the rest of your life.
No, I would just say thank you for the opportunity, and please give me a call if you have any questions that I can be helpful to you on any of this type of topic. So thank you.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it very much. With that, we'll go to Drew. Drew Phoenix is on the line and had been in touch with my office and had got the questions and said that Drew said that he would be willing to give a best shot at answering them verbally, but since the senator had asked them to be by close of business day, I did not ask him to do anything in writing. But at this point, Drew, put yourself on the record. Thanks for being flexible with us and being willing to come back and answer some questions. Put yourself on the record in any opening statements or answers to questions, however you want to proceed.
Good afternoon. I would be happy to just proceed with responses to the questions. I'm not sure, do you want to, if Senator Kelly wants to read the question first and I respond?
Maybe for the record, that might be the easiest way to go. Thank you for being patient with us, Drew. I appreciate it. Senator Kelly, how would you like to do that?
I can do that. That's fine.
Right.
And I think on Mr. Barton's questioning, I kind of asked the first question in the same way. It has to do with the resolution that came from the Human Rights
Commission. Can you hear him all right, Drew?
If you could speak up just a little more.
Yeah, I know
right.
You're speaking.
I hear people crazy because I have one of those voices that doesn't cut through. So the Human Rights Commission put out a resolution, and you had the question, so I assume you're familiar with the question I'm asking. It was the November 2nd resolution that directed staff to work with the Attorney General on proposed regulations for the inclusion of anti-discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And the question number one was, do you support the commission's actions in passing resolution 2016-02, which is that aforementioned resolution?
Yes, okay. I support the resolution as it furthers the commission's purpose of protecting Alaskans from discrimination.
Okay.
And it's consistent with a developing body of law interpreting the term sex.
Okay. And the developing body of law that you are referring to, is that state law or federal law?
Both the federal EEOC and as well as the April 4th Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals opinion, that was April 4th, opinion on Hively v. Ivy Tech Community College, which upheld that sex includes sexual orientation.
So those are federal issues, okay. And the Commission on Human Rights, do you think they have the authority, absent legislative authorization, to promulgate and enforce regulations that prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity?
The Commission has the authority to adopt procedural and substantive regulations to define terms found in the Alaska Human Rights Law. So interpreting the term sex to include sexual orientation is consistent with the federal EEOC, as I said before, as well as the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. So given that, I believe the Commission would be within its authority to interpret the term as these two entities have done so. But as with any administrative body, there are limits to the authority to promulgate regulations. But these limits are generally worked out in the process of adopting the regulations, such as the legislature's Administrative Regulation Review Committee, which would examine and comment on any proposed regulation, or within the court system. And without a thorough briefing on the matter, I would not be prepared to say today that the Commission does not have the authority to adopt a regulation interpreting the term sex.
Okay, that's fair. Something that could very well come before the Human Rights Commission, it has to deal with this body of law and regulation that we're talking about, are the questions similar to the gay couple that went to the wedding photographer. That's a federal case, concluded the photographer was guilty of illegal discrimination because they wouldn't do the wedding. And then the student in a high school that's biologically male but claims to have a gender identity as a female, and that young person is asserting the right to use the girls' restroom and join the girls' athletic team. Would you think that the school administration would be guilty of illegal discrimination if they said, no, you can't do that?
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
Point of order.
Senator Wilkowski.
When I asked the question, you deemed it to be a hypothetical question. This is a hypothetical question. In fact, the question starts, for the sake of argument, let us imagine that the legislature passes the law. So you prohibited me from asking a hypothetical question. I would assume that you're going to prohibit this hypothetical question.
Is that right? That's fair. That's fair.
Is there a way that you can narrow that down to a question?
Yeah, that's right. I think that it is only hypothetical in that it could. These are the kinds of issues that could come before the Human Rights Commission, and I just want to know if the candidate would think that the Human Rights Commission has the authority to claim that discriminatory based on the Alaska statutes. If you don't want to allow that, that's fine.
But no, the question is fine. The hypothetical probably was problematic. Okay. So.
As I said, I wanted to send Drew the questions so that ample time to prepare and not be on a hot seat on tiny little details.
Yeah, it gets to a philosophical point.
I just want a philosophical point because honestly, the candidate is not as concerning to me as the current commission and the direction that they're taking and some of the comments that they've made. The candidate wants to serve Alaska. All right. I don't want to put them on any kind of undue cross-examination or anything like that. I'm more concerned about the commission, and if this well-meaning person wants to join that commission, God bless them. I may not vote for them, but I kind of want to know what they're going to do with a commission that's already a little bit rogue. Mr. Chairman, with that, I'm just going to withdraw everything else, unless the candidate wants to.
Yeah, I certainly the discussion at the table is on our points of order, and the hypothetical I think was appropriately challenged. But the question of the authority of the commission to step into those areas beyond or pushing the level of statutes is that you already said at one point that you felt very strong, Drew, that. They were well within their limit to suggest that one set of regulations. Did you find anything in the senator's point that you wanted to comment on?
Was that on the hypothetical about the high school student?
The debate in our committee was whether we were going to go down into the rule of hypotheticals. But it is true that we're debating actually in another committee almost at this very moment the question of gender equality, and that has not found its way into law yet. And yet the bathroom debate nationwide has become one on whether somebody can use a bathroom however they choose to identify themselves on that particular day. And my guess is that'll end up its way into the Human Rights Commission, or has it already?
I don't have an answer to that last question. I would be willing just to say that I think there's a lot of confusion and misunderstanding on what it means to be transgender. And there's no risk posed to the public by allowing transgender individuals to use the bathroom that corresponds to their identity. And there's no evidence of a problem with abuse of gender identity protections for the purpose of accessing bathrooms. On the other hand, study after study suggests that the rate of suicide among transgender youth goes down in places where there are greater legal protections. But of course, you know, as we've been saying, the courts will have to consider the evidence and the current state of the law when determining whether illegal discrimination has occurred.
I think that's probably what we're trying to get at, is how you would see both the law and the debate that comes before you, and if you would defer it to a policy body like the legislature, or look for authority that you all had. And I think both you and Mr. Barton have got a depth of knowledge in your respective arenas, and we were just trying to figure out, and I even called Mr. Barton an advocate, and I think I even called you an advocate, because when you're knowledgeable in a certain area, certainly that's going to become a focus for being on the commission. So those are legitimate areas for discussion, and I think you just nailed it saying that the law would be your driver, if I understand correctly.
That is correct.
So we'll settle it at that. Mr. Phoenix, thank you for being willing to come before the committee again. I appreciate your patience and obviously the discussion. In fact, there are four people that are in line to testify and on your behalf. So I appreciate that. What I'm going to do is they'll release you, or you can stay online if you wish, as we move through the remaining of the conferees. And for those of you who are online who wish to testify, I will be doing that at the bottom of the hour, because I've got four bills that I wanted to get dealt with today, and we will allow time for public testimony, so I'll allow the last 15 or 20 minutes of the committee to get to that. So thank you for calling in, and with that, I'm going to move forward to the Alaska Judicial Council. We have Lynn Gallant, who is the appointee to the State Commission, the Alaska Judicial Council, I'm sorry. Lynn, are you online? If you are, give us your opening statement and why you would like to serve on this council, and anything that you feel that you would like for us to know about you.
Well, thank you very much for calling on me to testify, and a good afternoon to all the other members of the committee who are there. My name is Lynn Gallant. I currently work as a neonatal intensive care nurse at Providence, Alaska Medical Center, where I work part-time. My husband, years and years ago, when we first came to Alaska, clerked for Federal Judge James Vonnerheit. And I've always known what the Alaska Judicial Council does, because when he was in the legislature, years and years ago, he helped set it up. And we would always talk about what the Judicial Council was deciding, how they would pick judges, and how it was very different from where I grew up in Maine and where my husband grew up in North Carolina. So I applied when Governor Walker was elected. I applied to both the Board of Nursing and the Alaska Judicial Council as a member of the public. The Board of Nursing, I applied as a nurse, as a professional member. So, surprise, surprise, I was, to me at least, I was appointed to the Alaska Judicial Council. So I have been to the first official meeting we had a couple of weeks ago, where we evaluated 17 applicants for the two Superior Court positions on the Anchorage Superior Court, and it was eye-opening and interesting, and I had a wonderful time. I'm actually looking forward to continuing my work there if I am indeed confirmed by this committee.
Lynn, thank you very much for applying for both of them, and it looks like this council, if you've already got a look into it, so you already admitted some surprise. What were some of the things that were either new or surprising to you?
Well, I think I should maybe clarify that, in that it should be no surprise that when one is dealing with evaluating the careers of attorneys, that reams of paper would be required to read through. But that being said, I was really struck by both the quality of the attorneys who were on the council and the members of the public who were on the council. I was also very struck with the diligence done by all of us over looking at those judicial candidates and of evaluating those candidates over what is their experience versus what is the caseload at the Superior Court. What in your past has made you think that you would be qualified to do this as, you know, a 10 or a 15 or maybe a 20-year appointment? What made you want to become a Superior Court judge? So that whole process to me was extremely interesting. And it kind of reaffirmed my faith in the way that in the past, I have worked on municipal, state, and national elections at the polls on Election Day. And doing that really reaffirms to you how difficult it would be to have election fraud, because you know you get to see and participate in all of those safeguards. And part of being, you know, a member of the Judicial Council was looking at just the amount of background and investigation that is done to evaluate these candidates, and sort of the different kinds of questions that, like, an attorney would ask versus a member of the public would ask over the work that somebody who's going to be a judge would be. So in that regard, I found that really interesting.
Good. Are there questions for Lynn at this point? Lynn, for me as the chairman, thank you. You will get to be kind of the new eyes on the council, and new eyes always ask the questions that don't have a lot of history to them, but one of the reasons why public members are appointed is just for that reason, is it's a new set of eyes, and I think from this committee I can extend to you an appreciation for willingness to serve there. So thank you, and unless you have anything else you want to say, it looks like we've questioned ourselves out on appointees today.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, I know that there is a bill. I'm not exactly sure if it's still in the Senate, or, you know, there has been a discussion in the Alaska legislature in terms of increasing the number of public members.
Yes.
On both the Judicial Council and other boards. But I have to say, I mean, I do have an opinion on that, and part of that opinion is what we're trying to do is evaluate a judge that has to deal and an attorney has to practice in front of. And it's kind of like saying, I, as a nurse, should have the nursing board be equally balanced between the number of members of the public who do not know what I do and professional nurses who do know what I do.
Yeah.
Because I have to practice professionally for that board. So that's the only opinion I have for that, what I hear as a pending, you know, kind of discussion that is going around in the legislative circles.
Sure.
But that is the only opinion I have these days.
Sure. And Lynn, you just piqued the interest of the very guy that introduced that bill. So that would be Senator Kelly. So he has a question for you.
Actually, this is a question, and I'm not sure, because some boards do not have their members confirmed by the legislature. Do you know if the nurses' board, if the nurse board members actually go before the legislature?
Do not think that they do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I couldn't make a cute comparison between the nurses' board because they don't.
Well, my husband, the attorney, said maybe he should apply to the nursing board and the judicial council and get appointed to the nursing board.
Thanks.
It's just that I don't think Senator Kelly can stay quiet with that opinion being voiced. But thank you very much for being willing to serve, and we wish you well, and we're going to pass along the names that were brought before us today. And with that, I'll release you to your regular duties of the day.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lynn.
And thank you to the committee.
All right. With that, what I'm going to do at the end of the meeting, I'm going to bring up the sheet that says we're passing these on to the full body for recommendation. But I wanted to give those who called in for public testimony an opportunity to speak. But before I do that, I wanted to get Senate Bill 58 up. And so I'm going to ask the administration to get Senate Bill 58. And the reason I'm bringing Senate Bill up is we're in the last throes of the session, and a Senate Bill is probably, this would be one of the last Senate bills we deal with. And so I'd like to do that. And then we have a House bill that comes. Come on up, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. And what I'd like for you to do is in the next 10 or 15 minutes, lay this out for us. And my thinking is we'll have it laid out, and then we'll bring it back before us at our next meeting, which we intend to have the Commissioner of Public Safety and the Attorney General in front of us. But I'll bring this up early in that session, which would be Wednesday. And if there's not questions, then my intention is to move it out that day. Introduce yourself and the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ed Sniffen. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law, and with me today is Emma Pocon, an Assistant Attorney General with the Department as well. And thank you for hearing this bill today. I know three of you have heard this before in the Senate Resources Committee, and I know we're pressed for time, so I'll try to be quick and answer any questions the committee might have. So, as you all know, public utilities and pipelines in Alaska are regulated by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And to pay for that regulation, the Regulatory Commission assesses utilities what they call a regulatory cost charge. And that's eventually passed on to all of us on our utility bills. You see at the very bottom it'll say regulatory cost charge, maybe 49 or 50 cents or something. And that money goes to pay for the regulation of these utilities, the rate-making function that the Regulatory Commission performs, the commission salaries and their staff. The Department of Law also has a piece of that regulatory cost charge. So the statute currently allows the Attorney General to participate before the RCA in utility matters to protect the public interest. So when somebody files a tariff and they want to raise your utility rates, we come in to protect the public interest and make sure that those raises are just and reasonable. And so it matters that the Attorney General participates in before the Regulatory Commission. We also get a little piece of that regulatory cost charge. And so to explain a little more about what that charge is and where it comes from, we've got a really short presentation, a PowerPoint, and it goes through the statutory authority for it. It's created by these two statutes, 4205-254 and 4206-286. One is for utilities, one is for pipelines. And who pays it? It's the public utilities and the pipelines that benefit from the work. So the customers whose rates are maybe a little lower because of our efforts, you know, are the ones who actually, you know, pay into this. And they, you know, like pipeline carriers will pass these charges on to their customers, you know, as well. And this is what it pays for. As I explained, for the Regulatory Commission, it pays for their work and for the Regulatory Affairs and Public Advocacy section at the Department of Law. It pays for the work we do in appearing before the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And what it's really paying for is just and reasonable rates for utility and pipeline customers. And here's the limit on that authority. So the statute puts a cap on how big this regulatory cost charge can be. And for the RCA, that cap is 0.7% of the adjusted gross revenue of operations in the state by utilities and pipelines. And for the Department of Law's function at RAPA, that cap is at 0.17%. And to put those into real numbers, here's a chart we put together. So for 2017, what that cap translated to for the Department of Law was our cap was roughly $2.374 million. We submitted a budget last year for $2.33 million, so we were about $40,000 under the cap. And what this pie chart shows is that we spent about 7% of our time on pipeline matters that came before the Regulatory Commission, and the rest of our time was spent on utility matters. And one thing to note is with this bill, we're not asking to grow the size of the pie. What it would do is allow us to just change the shape of the pieces a little bit, so we might be able to spend more of our time on pipeline work if we are doing more work before the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And so what this would change is it does not change the cap, but it would allow some costs that we are incurring before the FERC. So what has happened over the last couple of years? We have been trying to reduce our reliance on outside counsel because those outside counsel contracts are just hugely expensive and we're all tightening our belt. So we're bringing a lot of that work in-house, and we're trying to develop the in-house expertise to do matters that come before the FERC. And it's been successful this last couple of years. We've reduced our outside counsel fees significantly. And so we're starting to do more and more of that work in-house. And when we started doing that, we saw an opportunity to get some of that work paid through this regulatory cost charge, because the folks who are benefiting from our work are the people who are getting the lower rates. So how would this impact consumers? This question came up. We wanted to put a little example out there. So in the pipeline world, which is where this would have the biggest impact, if you added $100,000 to a bill for a pipeline company who was receiving oil off of taps for transportation services, that $10,000 bill would increase by $4.10 if we were to include it in this surcharge. So it's not a big amount of money. And again, why now? It's because we're starting to bring more of this FERC pipeline work in-house to save money. Some questions have come up about whether this would impact AKLNG, and the short answer is no, it will not. That's a different pipeline, different jurisdiction, so no, it wouldn't have no impact on that. And then finally, is there a check on how we spend this money? And the answer is yes, there is. There are two checks. One, of course, is the cap. You set the cap. The legislature, you know, sets that by statute. We can't exceed the cap. We're close to it now already. But also, at the end of every year, the Department of Law submits its budget to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska in a public docket. And we're a fishbowl with our spending. Everyone gets to see it. Anyone can comment on that. If something is going awry, folks can certainly weigh in and tell us that we're doing something inappropriate. So there's a public check, and then there's a legislative check on this fund. So I know that was quick. I apologize, but I didn't want to take up too much time. But if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer any.
I suggested he quickly. So, Senator Meyer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be quick as well. This may be may show my ignorance in this area here. The it says on line six, it says the Attorney General shall participate as a party. Does that mean the Attorney General themselves or his or her designee?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it's the Attorney General's designee. So when that happens, it's usually someone in my section that does that.
Thank you. Senator Costello has a question.
Thank you. And does the RCA have an opinion on the bill that you're aware of?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, they are very aware of it. I believe they are very supportive. They would have to go through a public process to formally announce that. We've spoken with them on a number of occasions, and they don't have any issues with the bill.
And as a chairman, I haven't received any negative comments from them at this point. Other questions, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I might just comment. In the Resources Committee, actually, Commissioner Norm Wolkberg testified in favor, so.
That is correct. Thanks for that correction.
Right, you're on that.
I am. I heard it myself. I just forgot it. Senator Wilkowski.
Just ask you the same question I asked in Resources, and this doesn't fully cover the amount that you need. You still need to pull some out of the general fund. How much would you need to change it in order to fully cover your budget for this?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, and we received that question from you in the last committee. We did some calculations, and to recover an additional $750,000 to our budget, which is about what we anticipate we would need. Of course, these are ballparks, they change every year. We would need to increase that 0.17% cap to 0.23% or by 0.06% more.
Other questions? Ed, thank you. You did exactly what I asked you to do, keep it tight, and because we've got a lot to, I want to get done in this committee today. Thank you very much. I'm going to hold this over till Wednesday. Any questions before the committee or any concerns? Because my intention is to bring it up early in the Wednesday meeting and ask for a movement or hold it forever, whatever. So I'm supportive of it. So we'll see on Wednesday. Thank you, Ed. Thank you very much for coming here, bringing it up brief. Do we have, and I'm going to lay it aside at this point, thank you very much. Do we have anybody from the House Judiciary Committee for House Bill 108 here? Let's bring up House Bill 108, and I think the reason I want to bring this up now is this is a companion to a Senate bill that has found its way into our committee. And just tell us what the differences are, the process of this bill, give us your best shot at it. And put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Sure. My name is Sarah Perman. I'm a staff to Representative Matt Clayman in House District 21, West Anchorage. And in the interest of short time, I won't go over our intro. I'll just say briefly that we, like Senator Hughes, are supportive of this because we recognize that Alaska has an aging population. 75,000 Alaskans are over the age of 65. And as we become increasingly a computer-savvy generation, this becomes more and more important. We have introduced a CS. The House Judiciary Committee has a CS, and it takes the exact language that you've already seen in Senate Bill 16, and with that it adds the Alaska statutory power of attorney form, and it adds a section that adds digital assets. And I will turn it over to Deborah Bear, the delegate from the Uniform Law Commission, to give a little more information on that.
Right. And Deborah, thank you very much. And we actually had Deborah give testimony to the other bill that we have in committee, but this is now the vehicle. And so wanted to know the differences. And so, Deborah, please.
This is Deborah Bear, and I'm a member of the Alaska Uniform Law Commission delegation. And Sarah is correct. This House version before you incorporates the material that was in the Senate version that you heard the other day. The only major change is in Section 1 of the bill, and it deals with the Alaska statutory power of attorney form. And what it does, if you look on page 3 of the bill, lines 26 through 28, it sets up a specific checkbox so that if someone who uses the statutory form can say, yes, I want my fiduciary to have access to the content of my electronic communications. What I thought would be helpful is if I give a real quick example on it. If I was going to go do missionary work in Africa, for example, this is power of attorney. So I would try to set up all my finances to a way that they'd go very seamlessly while I was in Africa. I could have my brother handle my power of attorney. If it's the way things are right now, all my bills were paperless or electronic, and he needed to get into my electronic communications while I was away, this bill sets up, I would check this box. It would affirmatively say, yes, my brother, who is my agent for the time I'm overseas in Africa, could look at my electronic communications. When he took it to Google or Facebook or whatever, their first question would be, have you signed the online tool? Well, perhaps I hadn't because I wasn't aware of it. Then they would go to the second level, which is, do you have explicit direction and approval from your principal to get into the content of electronic communications? This will do it. And so that should resolve an issue. If it was not there, you would be ending up in a court case where Google would be saying, I'd love to honor it, but my terms of service agreement says I'm going to keep it confidential, and your power of attorney doesn't expressly authorize it. So this addresses a question raised in another committee, which was, are there any statutory forms that need to be changed? Yes, this one needs to be changed.
Deborah, that was very, very good explanation. Any questions at this point for either the sponsor or Deborah? What I'd like to do is I wanted this description, and I'd like to bring it up for a vote. Senator Costello, I'd like to ask for a motion to see if people would like to move this thing out, because it'd be my intent to move it up to the next committee.
Mr. Chair, I move CS for House Bill number 108, Judiciary Version Romeo, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Yep, thank you. Is there any objection to moving this bill forward? With that, thank you, ladies. Appreciate it very much. We'll pass that form around. While we're passing that form around, though, because of the time of day, I'm going to ask Senator Egan to come forward and bring us his Senate Bill 100. And I know I'm kind of trotting along, but I think it's like the 90-day problem. We're trying to move this thing along. So right now we're going to bring Senate Bill 100, which is Municipal Liens, Authority for, and Priority. And Senator, welcome to our committee.
Great, and thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for hearing this in such short order. And I'm going to keep quiet because we've had absolutely no opposition from anyone as yet, so I won't talk. I appreciate your looking at this piece of legislation.
Is there anything that you've... okay, good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask for a couple of pieces of testimony today, and we have some online, and we have one in the room. We have attorney in Anchorage. Attorney from Anchorage and attorney from Juneau. But first, I'd like for the AML to come up because it's not just those two municipalities. So I thought maybe we should get a broader view, and then we'll go down to these two testimonies, and then we'll go to work.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kathy Wasserman, the Alaska Municipal League. On this bill, you have letters from Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks, Kenai, Sitka, and Kodiak also weighed in. I remember when this issue first arose, and this is simply a housekeeping bill that will fix an unintended consequence and allow municipalities to once again go back and file liens where before they were prohibited due to ruling that came down after the Kodiak Island Borough versus Cutler decision.
That's right. That was a good refresher. Thank you. And I think the senator and staff actually made that point very well as well. Thank you very much. Any questions for the... Thank you very much. Appreciate. Same thing is going to go with... I'm going to go with Bill Falsey. And he's in the municipality of Anchorage, and then we'll go to Amy Mead. Bill, can you hear us? A brief testimony on this?
Yes, I can. I'm happy to provide that. Thank you for soliciting our testimony today. I'm Bill Falsey, the municipal attorney for the municipality of Anchorage. In the interest of time, I'll keep it brief as well. In the official legislative program that the Anchorage Assembly adopted last fall, it requested, as one of its priority items, changes to state law that would restore the traditionally understood ability of municipalities to protect their law-abiding citizens by recording liens. SB 100 would accomplish that goal. We and a lot of other jurisdictions have transmitted letters in support of it, and we appreciate its consideration. As Senator Egan said last Friday, this is really designed to clean up an unintended consequence of a bill that fixed an entirely unrelated problem. I think it was a problem that probably even originated in Anchorage, where we had some disgruntled folks who were filing liens against the personal property of our Anchorage mayor and various assembly members. In wiping out that nefarious practice, we swept up municipal liens in the same net. And the only thing I'll add in the interest of time is that it would be somewhat surprising for the municipalities to be left out of this lien framework. If you were to pick up Title 34 of the Alaska statutes and thumb through, you see that the legislature has allowed all sorts of individuals to file all kinds of liens to secure their debts. And that's everyone from mechanics, those who are working on mines and oil wells, common carriers, property storage operators, cattle grazers, fish packers, fish processors, attorneys, hotels and boarding houses, even night watchmen, lumberjacks, and the like. So we appreciate the committee's considerations. Bill, we're happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Falsey? Thank you, Bill. Appreciate you taking the time. Amy, I'm going to ask you to come up equally to give your testimony.
I just wanted to be available to answer any questions if you had any. If you need an example of why this bill is so important, I have one of those as well, but I was really just here for the committee.
All right, thank you. Questions, anybody? I don't see any questions, Amy. Thank you very much. I think most of us have been made aware and get it. So thank you very much for taking the time for both Bill, Amy, and Kathy for taking the time out to come before us. I know it's a rapid movement, but I would like to bring the Senate Bill 100 up before us and move it on to, I think this is its only committee referral, so it will go to the Rules Chairman next, and I think the House has got theirs in the same place. So. Senator Costello.
I move Senate Bill Number 100, Version Juliet, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Any objection to moving Senate Bill 100 to the Rules Committee? With that, Senate Bill 100 is moved from committee, and we'll do the same thing. We'll have the packet passed with each one while we call up the next bill, which is this House Bill 106 bill. House Bill 106 is before us, which is the Act allowing appropriations to the Civil Legal Services Fund for court filing fees. And we've heard this bill once before. And I'm going to propose an amendment. But before we do, anything you wanted to add after the question you heard the last time it was up? And put yourself on the record. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Coghill, members of the committee, Mary Abelzich-Schlosser, staff representative of FANSA, District 38. I'm mostly here to answer questions. I just wanted to point out that 48 other states fund similar organizations from their state, and then that 33 of those states use court fees to do so.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's a good statistic. And has that been passed out to committee members?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Yes, I thought. Okay. And I appreciate that because this is a funding source. There's other funding sources. For example, I know there are grants that go from the state to this group. This is just a funding source that has been brought up for debate for many, many years. And because of that, what I'm going to do at this point for the committee's edification, I already said that I struggle with giving this particular thing, but I did get convinced to bring it up and bring it up for debate. And it does have another committee. I think it'd be inappropriate for me to hold it at this point since I agreed to let it go. So I'm going to propose an amendment to reduce the 25% to the 5% and then see what the Finance Committee will want to do with that. Because we do granting and because I struggle with a designated source. So with that, if I could have, if there's any questions for the sponsor at this point?
Okay. I have a question.
Senator Wilkowski and then Senator Costello.
Yeah, on the what other states do, do you know what percentage they typically do their funding source at? So this is 25%. Do the other states do it at 25 or 5 or 50 or what?
Through the chair, represent a Senator Wilkowski. Excuse me, I've been in the House too long. It varies by state because of the size of the state and the size of the court. So I don't have those statistics on hand, but I'm happy to get some back to you at a later date. My apologies. Nicole Nelson is here and might have some of that information, and I will defer to her.
We could have the executive director. I know I pushed the other bills right along because I knew we were going to have this debate, and I want to allow time for those who hung on for a long time for testimony with the State Commission on Human Rights. I wanted to give them ample opportunity to testify. And so please put yourself on the record, and if you know some of the answers to that,
sure.
Let us know.
My name is Nicole Nelson, and I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Legal Services. And through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, as Mary stated, there's a wide range with respect to the funding that's provided by states for civil legal aid. Big states like Texas provide $8 or $9 million in a straight appropriation plus another $14 to $15 million in fee appropriations, whereas a state that's probably most comparable in size to Alaska in rurality, Wyoming, provides $1.3 million in appropriation or in a filing fees per year.
Okay.
And the range goes anywhere in between that, but I think
Senator Wilkowski,
yeah,
to
right
continue.
Now, what's Alaska? Is are we zero?
Alaska Legal Services right now, our appropriation is $450,000.
So this would get us a little bit close to Wyoming.
They would bring it up, about 400. Mm-hmm. And the proposal that I'd have, it'd be 100, basically, somewhere in that neighborhood. And then let the Finance Committee kind of figure it out, because they have to look at other appropriations that we do in grants. And part of my struggle is that the designation, it would squeeze it down pretty tight. Senator Costello.
Thank you. Mary, it's good to see you, and Nicole. In the documentation that we received, it says that there are certain cases that you're prohibited from participating in. And the last one listed, it says cases where a private attorney would take the case on a contingency fee basis. And I was just curious, how do you find out whether or not an attorney would take such a case?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Costello, we do this through two reasons, or two means. First off, we don't take any personal injury cases, and those are the type of cases where private attorneys typically take cases on a contingency fee basis. Secondly, if somebody comes to us and requests our assistance and it looks like in our assessment that a private attorney might be willing to take on the case, we require that person to go get 3 denials from somebody in the private bar to say that the private bar wouldn't take it on because it's not financially viable for them.
Thank you.
So, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps you've already answered this and I missed it, but do you get folks that will do pro bono work on these cases?
Yes, through the chair, as Senator Meyer, we do. We have a strong pro bono program. Each year, over 100 cases are taken on by private attorneys through our pro bono program. And last year, through a very conservative estimate of the donated hours, was over $500,000 in donated hours by private attorneys who volunteer to help us take on cases as well.
Senator Meyer,
and do private attorneys also contribute financially, or is it just pretty much the...
Yes, we have, through the chair, Senator Meyer, yes, private attorneys also donate to us. We have a private giving campaign to ask people to donate to our services as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and just for Senator Wilkowski, if the bill stood as it was, it would give a stream of somewhere around just short of $500,000, and that's why, because of the grants that we already passed out in budget, I felt that we could squeeze it down and then just have a this conversation probably is not going to go away. It's just that I felt very strongly that maybe another $100,000. We actually are cutting Office of Public Advocacy. We're cutting our public defenders. We're cutting our prosecutors, and so I felt kind of awkward. So what I'm going to ask Senator Costello, if she would move the amendment, and then I can object so that we can have a discussion on it.
I move amendment number 1 to House Bill 106. This is version 8.1.
And it's simple. It would take line...
Did you object?
I'll object, only so I can describe it. I'm not objecting to the amendment, but it would take the 25% really and just take it to 5%. That would be somewhere around about $100,000, and I know I can't ask the ladies in front of me to agree with the amendment because they are pushing for the bill, but at this point I wanted to register how I felt that in the squeeze that we have this year, it would be important to at least have this part of the discussion, and otherwise I would have an awful hard time moving the bill along. So any other comment on the amendment? Senator Wilkowski and then Senator Costello.
Well, I
certainly don't want to hold the bill up from moving on to another committee, Mr. Chairman.
I know.
If that's sort of the condition, I guess maybe I shouldn't object. But, boy, this is, we fund our legal services at a much lower rate than we probably should, just looking over some of the documents in the file. In May 2000, the Alaska Supreme Court Access to Civil Justice Task Force report recommended that they be Alaska Legal Services be funded at a minimum of 1982 levels, and if that were the case, and it was adjusted for inflation, their budget would be over $10 million. Yeah. And we're way off the mark on that, Mr. Chairman. And so 5% is certainly better than nothing. At the same time, I don't think it goes near far enough. It's so I'm going to object to the amendment.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I understand that. It's the methodology, not the amount. I just described the amount mainly because we're cutting some of our own state agencies so much. So, Senator Costello?
Oh, Mr. Chair, it's just my understanding that without the ability of dedicated funds, even if it were to pass at 25%, that would not be any assurance that that amount would actually go to the fund. And so I just wanted to make that clear for those who aren't aware that we can designate, but we're not allowed to dedicate.
Yeah, that's true. We have, as the two to my left know, we have budgets that have a lot of signposts on them, and a lot of signposts point to direct funds the best we can. And that's exactly what this is. It's a way, when you're doing your budget cycle, to say, you know, by the way, the legislature said that we like this. It's a signpointer to it. And so that's one of the struggles I've had along the way. But we do have others that are in budget units. This is, because it's not a state agency, it would have to be statutorily driven. So, but we do granting, and we have done for a number of years. So, any objection to the amendment beyond that, Senator Wilkowski? Do you maintain it? Do you want me to do a roll call?
I probably see where this is headed, Mr. Chairman, so I'll withdraw my objection.
Okay. All right. So, with that, I think we actually has brought the debate of the bill up on what we're doing here, and I think, with all respect for the work that you do, I will bring this up for a vote. What's the will of the committee on House Bill 106 as amended?
Mr. Chairman, did you withdraw your objection?
I did.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator? Yes.
Oh. I move Senate Bill number 100 as amended.
Oh, no. It's House Bill 106.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong tab. I'm glad you're paying attention. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 106 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
So objection to moving the bill to this next committee. With that, House Bill 106 as amended will move from committee. Thank you, ladies, for being here today. And
yes,
we'll continue taking testimony for the State Commission on Human Rights at this point. We're going to go to those who have very patiently waited, for which I'm deeply grateful. As you can see, we're trying to get some of this business wrapped up because of the end of the session. But we do have Joshua Hemsef in Anchorage who would like to testify. He's been online with us since 1:30. So thank you, Joshua. Are you still there, and are you willing to give some testimony at this point?
I am, Chairman Kotko. Thanks for taking my testimony today. And thank you, Honorable Senators of the Judiciary Committee, for serving our state so well. I'm testifying today in support of the appointment of Drew Phoenix to the Alaska State Commission on Human Rights. I have known Drew for nearly 5 years in a range of positions. As an ordained minister holding positions with local organizations, Drew has always demonstrated the meaning of compassion and standing for justice, as he saw today, two traits that are vital to the work of this commission. My family and I have lived in Alaska for 23 years. While I grew up in Eagle River, I now live in Senator Costello's district. Currently, I serve as the sole staff person for the Regional Community Foundation, Pride Foundation, an organization that has been investing in Alaskan students, leaders, and organizations in that same time frame. While serving Alaska and Pride Foundation in this role, I came to know Drew when he served as the first paid executive director for Identity, Alaska's statewide LGBTQ education and service organization. Together, we worked on a program with the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation to encourage local businesses to voluntarily adopt inclusive workplace practices. In this capacity, Drew became the go-to resource for workplaces looking to update their policies to attract and retain qualified talent. He developed a relationship with the Anchorage affiliate of the Society for Human Resource Management. Among those already serving, Drew is incredibly qualified and committed to the values and organizing principles of the State Commission on Human Rights, which is why I was appalled to hear the questions directed toward Drew at last week's meeting. The Alaska Senate and its Judiciary Committee are distinguished bodies necessary to carry out the deliberative work of our legislative branch. The Commission is an apolitical body designed to fact-find and set policy that protects both employees and employers. Any line of questioning that puts politics or other subjects ahead of the work of the Commission is disrespectful to the appointees, the Commission, and the people of Alaska whom this body governs and serves. I appreciate the opportunity to testify to this committee and to testify on behalf of a close colleague and friend, Drew Phoenix. I hope that you move forward with your confirmation of his appointment. Thank you.
Thank you, Joshua. It was not meant to be disrespectful, but we do get into some pretty interesting discussions down here, and things do get political in the political arena. With that, we're going to go to Reverend Martin Eldred, who is an Eagle River.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Coghill and the senators there. My name is Reverend Dr. Martin Eldred. I serve a Lutheran church here in Eagle River, and I am also calling to testify in support of Mr. Drew Phoenix for service on the Alaska Human Rights Commission. I've known Drew and have worked with Drew since at least 2009. We've worked on a variety of community projects, both supporting equal rights for all citizens in our municipality here in Anchorage and Eagle River, but also with education and working with people to break down some of the barriers and misconceptions of particularly the transgender community. And in those interactions with Mr. Phoenix, I've seen him as a very intelligent, articulate individual. He's passionate, but he's also compassionate for those who maybe are struggling with how to deal with what they see as some of the changes in the world. So I think Drew does a good job of educating in a gentle way. He's a good friend, he's a colleague, and I think he could only help our state as we continue to seek to be the best we can as a state and guarantee the individual rights for all people in our state. And with that, I'll conclude.
Thank you for being patient with us, Mr. Eldred, and appreciate you taking time to testify with him. And with that, we're going to go to Reverend Michael Burke, who's in Anchorage.
Chairman Coghill, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity and letting me kind of weigh in on these things today. I'm Reverend Michael Burke. I serve as senior pastor of St. Mary's Episcopal Church in Anchorage. And actually, my background is in working for non-discrimination related to people who experience disabilities. But I want to testify on behalf of Drew Phoenix for a seat on the State Human Rights Commission. I've worked with Drew on a number of different community issues over, probably a period of 7 years or so. And Drew and I disagree on a number of things, including on some of the items of discussion earlier today. But three things stand out to me about Drew, all of which I think would be helpful. One is he's not an ideologue. I really like the way that Drew works to bring people together. And I've been in several kind of highly emotionally charged discussions with him with a lot of people. And he's pretty skilled at getting people to identify the common ground that they share and then to kind of work forward from that basis. He's a real calming influence on a bunch of people. Number two, I think that Drew really listens. And he listens not just so he can make a report, but I think he listens to understand. And again, to be able to better bring people together. And he's really good at making careful distinctions, you know, both on points of law and also in the details of a particular situation or case. I know that Drew has changed my opinion on a number of different things through the years. Probably I've changed his opinion as well. In this day and age when we've lost the good common sense value of listening to one another, I think Drew would be kind of a calm and a reasonable voice. So when I heard that he was up for nomination, I just wanted to take a chance to call in and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. I appreciate you taking the time and your patience to testify, and it's on the record, and I really appreciate your time and effort. With that, we're going to go to Julia Seymour, Reverend Julia Seymour, who's in Anchorage as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators, for the time. I'm the Reverend Julia Seymour. I serve Lutheran Church of Hope in Anchorage, right in the Midtown area. I've known Drew, I think, since 2011 and worked with him on a variety of issues. I really want to say that as an Alaskan resident who has two small children, as the wife of a Lieutenant Colonel in the Army, as a Christian minister, Drew is really one of the most compassionate Alaskans that I know, and his ability even to patiently listen to people who disagree with him and respond with grace under fire was really in evidence in last week's questioning and then in testimony today, but has always been evident in the work that I've done with him. And I think Alaska couldn't be better served in this time when due to our economics and a wide variety of things, the population of the state is changing, and we need people from a wide body of backgrounds and skill sets to be aware of what the rights of people are, how to pay attention to the Constitution, how to encourage the legislature to continue to help us to be the great land and the frontier that is appealing to all kinds of people that we know we are. And Drew is really the candidate for that position. Thank you for your time today.
Reverend Seymour, thank you very much for coming and once again for being patient and articulate and brief. And so thank you very much all for coming for the committee and members of the committee. Thank you for your patience to order things the way I have. In accordance with the Alaska Statute 3905080, the Judiciary Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointment be forwarded to the joint session for consideration. We have, last week we did the Alaska Police Standards Council. We had Bryce Johnson, Board of Governors of Alaska Bar, William Granger. Today we took up the State Commission on Human Rights, and Drew Phoenix, David Barton, the Alaska Judicial Council, Lynn Gallant. And this does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote or for or against the confirmation of the individual during the further session, but we will pass them along to the body who really has the ownership of these questions. Thank you very much. I'm going to pass this on to the Senate Secretary. Anything else before the committee? Appreciate the concise, and we had to deal with a lot today. I wish we could have spent more time on some of these issues, but I actually allowed myself 4 whole minutes at the end of the session. So anyway, with that, we're adjourned.